Welcome to Controlled Chaos. I am your host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my lovely sister, Mindy.
Hey, everybody. How we doing?
Very good. And today we're going to be discussing the Scream franchise. We're going to be doing a retrospective. We're going to be doing a deep dive, kind of telling you things maybe you didn't know, giving our opinions on it. Tell us a little bit of your backstory with the Scream franchise, because I know this is a favorite of yours, Mindy.
Yeah, I was kind of raised on horror movies, scary stuff, everything like that. So when the Scream franchise came out, and the first one in 1996, I was 6 years old, but my father still showed it to me when it released in December, right before Christmas. I fell in love with it. So did my dad, and every year we had watched it over and over and over, and then as the franchise grew, the marathon grew, and my love for it grew. I love Wes Craven. I think he's an amazing director. I love everything he's done. People Under the Stairs, they come back. Very good act. Very, very good director. Very good. The actors they chose for it, very good acting choices as well for all four films.
Right.
Even though I'm not a fan of the third.
Yeah.
Third can be thrown under the table, buried with dirt. I don't care about it. But that being said, Daniel, did you know that there was actually supposed to be a second killer in the third one?
No, I didn't. Tell me about it.
The woman that played Angelina. And she did Sydney's part for Stab 3. She was actually supposed to be Roman's longtime girlfriend, and she was supposed to be the second killer.
Oh, really?
Yes. Roman was not supposed to kill all of them at the same time. She was supposed to be involved, but they scratched it.
Yeah. And we'll get there eventually. I'd like to start with the first movie because that's what kind of laid the groundwork for everything.
I agree.
This obviously was a legendary Hollywood script written by Kevin Williamson, who I know you're a big fan of. And it gets picked up by Wes Craven. And, of course, there's a lot of, you know, behind-the-scenes stuff. There's documentaries to watch, too, if you want to know some of that stuff, too. But originally, Drew Barrymore was supposed to be Sydney, right, Mindy?
Yes, actually, she committed to the role immediately upon reading the script, and unfortunately, she had gotten a different offer for a different movie that she had already had in retrospect before Scream, so she had to take the other opportunity, but being so dedicated to the project, she decided to do the first scene as Casey Becker. She worked that out with Wes Craven.
Right. And she eventually, now there's a couple rumors on why she pulled out, but it's pretty much just she just thought it would be better for the movie, right, if she played Casey instead of Sydney.
There's a lot of debate on that over the years, unfortunately. Like, right when Scream came out, her comedy Never Been Kissed came out.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of controversy as to whether she wanted to be Casey and not Sydney, or if she really did have another opportunity. I mean, unfortunately, Wes Craven, who's tragically passed away, he never was able to confirm that for anybody. He always just said that it was scheduling issues.
Right. And I mean, it definitely ended up working out for the movie. Do you think that the movie would have had as long-lasting of a legacy or maybe spawned the franchise that it did if Drew Barrymore would have been Sydney and Neve Campbell never stepped in?
Because of Drew Barrymore's just notoriety with everything she's done, I mean, Neve Campbell, yes, she did do The Craft right before Scream. She also did Party of Five, but that's really all she was known for. And that's actually why Wes wanted her from seeing her in Party of Five. But before her, Drew Barrymore was also introduced. There was a lot of other people that were also brought in to be Sydney as well, as in like Jennifer Love Hewitt and people of that nature. but they ended up going with Neve Campbell. As far as keeping the series the same, I kind of think that it may have turned campy over like the first few films, and I feel like unfortunately it would have been more like a Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
Yeah.
And yeah, we would have gotten more movies out of it, but we already have a Freddy. We already have a comical serial killer. We don't need another one.
Yeah. Well, and Sydney's story is kind of what drives this franchise, right?
Absolutely.
We will be talking about the TV series a little bit if we have time. If not, we can do that a different time. But these four movies is pretty much Sydney's story. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's her story finding out about her mother, because her mother is the one that started it all, because her mother was the one that basically ruined hers and her family's life, because she had all of these secrets. Sydney even admitted herself and later on that she didn't even know her own mother.
Yeah.
That she thought she did. She thought she was her mom's best friend, but she really didn't know her after everything was being uncovered. So yes, I do feel like it is Sydney's story, but I kind of feel like it's her mom's story too.
Oh yeah, the death of Maureen Prescott definitely jump-started the series.
Yeah, but I feel like over the years too, just like with the little snippets and everything they put of Maureen in there, like the second, third, and whatnot, which we'll get to, I feel like it's more of a story of a young woman overcoming obstacles while finding out about her mother and finding out about her heritage and who she came from.
Yeah.
Who actually raised her.
Yeah.
Because her father was a businessman. He was on business trips all the time. That's why Maureen had affairs, because she was unfortunately very sexually active and couldn't keep it controlled.
Yeah.
Father wasn't there. She found other people, unfortunately for Sydney. But I do feel bad for Sydney, just because I feel like no matter what happens in her life, something else bad happens. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would. I definitely would agree. Would you say that this series and Scream as a whole kind of not debuted, but maybe brought to prominence the whodunit in scary movies? Or do you think that because you had your killers like Michael, Jason, Freddy. I can't remember too many times where you had a movie like this where anybody could be the killer.
Well, that's the thing. There are a few movies that were out there, but they weren't in the 90s. They were more in the 80s. That was more of the slasher drama between the 1970s and the 80s. That's where you got Black Christmas, which was an anonymous killer, and a bunch of other great ones that I will discuss on Halloween because I don't want to waste all our time here. But so I will say that I don't think it regenerated the whodunit, but I do think that it gave rebirth to the slasher series as a whole.
Yeah.
I do think slashers were dying in the 90s, and I really do feel like this breathed some life into it.
Yeah, and it's smart, and it's really, and we've seen it copied multiple times.
Absolutely. I mean, Cutthroat Alley is another one that's been copied. I mean, a lot of them had tried to copy Scream over the years, like one of your favorites, I know what you did last summer, which is written by the same guy.
Yes.
But as many people will argue that they're the same, they're very different.
Yeah. Well, Williamson has also gone on record to say that Scream, I Know What You Did Last Summer wasn't supposed to be like another Scream. It was supposed to more emulate the slashers of the 80s that you were talking about, where you got this kind of like brutal, like guy, like it wasn't really a whodunit either. Like,
no.
They kind of knew what was going on.
Exactly. Kind of like in Slaughter High, the movie I showed you.
Yeah.
And the young man, like, they knew who was coming for them, but they didn't know when it was coming.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good one to check out, too. But the whodunit, and I wanted to ask you, because you and me, whenever like a new series and the TV show came out, or even when Scream 4 came out, because I was kind of already a big enough fan, even though I was a kid, you and me always debated, you know, who's the killer? Who's the guy? Who was your honest to true guesses who the killer would be when you first saw the movie when you were a little kid? Did you think it was Billy the whole time?
I knew that Billy was involved just because of how many times they used him. But I honestly thought it was Randy and Billy.
Ooh.
I never would have thought it was Stu because of Randy's knowledge of the serial films and horror films and whatnot. But also, you have to give some credit to Billy Loomis. He knows his horror.
Yeah.
He knew the Carrie stuff. He did the line from Psycho. He brought up The Exorcist. So he knows his stuff. So him and Randy really could have been a powerhouse. So honestly, that's who I thought. Who do you think was it when I showed you it when you were like five?
Oh, honestly, and I don't know if you remember this, and it kind of seems weird now thinking it. I thought it was Dewey.
Oh, yeah, I do remember you thought it was Dewey.
I thought he was a crooked cop, and he was, like, working against him the whole time.
I do remember you thought it was Dewey, because when he got stabbed, you were like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
And you had to change your answer.
Yeah.
You were like, I have no idea.
I mean, yeah, I think I've always got it wrong, yes. But, yeah, I thought it was Dewey, because to me it would make sense, too, because he got close to Sydney through Tatum and everything. And I mean, that'd be cool, but I mean, obviously you can't do that. He's the most genuine character in the series, probably.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't know this. I don't even know if you know this, Daniel, but David Arquette, the man that plays Dewey, actually auditioned and landed the part for Billy Loomis.
Yeah, I didn't know that until you told me earlier.
And he actually went through with it until he saw the screenplay. The script, and he was like, yeah, I don't want to play this kind of character. I want to play the cop. Well, at that time, Wes Craven wanted Dewey to be a sex symbol, to be a macho man. And of course, that's not
no.
So they decided to switch the two because Billy Loomis is supposed to be, like, more bumbling.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So they switched the two characters in the script, and then David Arquette took the role of Dewey, and then they found somebody else to play Billy Loomis, who was Skeet Ulrich, which Wes Craven cast them on one reason and one reason alone. From the back of his head, he looks like Cotton Weary, like Lee Schreiber.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And that would have been the best way to get away with going through the house in his and Cotton's coat to get away with everything.
Yeah.
So they pointed that out. And also, Wes Craven, also thought that he looked a lot like Johnny Depp did in Nightmare on Elm Street, especially climbing through the window.
I can see
that. That's ultimately why they went with Skeet Ulrich.
I mean, I think it was a wonderful move. I mean, when you talk about some of the best horror movie killers, yes, Ghostface gets brought up, but I think for what Billy did and how Billy was throughout the whole movie and just his little mannerisms and his psychology, you got to put him among the greats, even with Jason and Freddy and stuff. I know he's not a monster, but as far as serial killers, this dude was very, I'm trying to think of the word, but very sociopathic, too.
Very sadistic.
Yeah.
A very sadistic person. And going back on what you say about monsters, I would have to differ on that a little bit. I do kind of view Billy Loomis as a monster.
Yeah.
Because a person can be a monster, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I really do feel like there was a lot going in his head. I actually am a little upset that they cut some of the scenes from Scream. I understand because of the ratings and whatnot. But honestly, I really feel like there should have been a little bit more backstory on Billy and how much he was affected, because honestly, you didn't see that he was affected that much until the very end.
Yeah.
When he blew up. So I just feel like we deserve to see a little bit more, especially when they're trying to get us to believe that he was the one that did it.
Yeah.
But that's just my own personal opinion.
The way that character is written, besides the little holes that you just talked about, is pretty much flawless, though.
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
The character of Billy Loomis, the only reason I said monsters was because, like, you got Michael Myers and stuff. That's like, he seems like this unbeatable thing. I mean, we've seen him die, but still. Like, it's like this big monster type
thing.
They
made him immortal.
Yeah. So when your killer is like a teenager, and Skeet Ulrich is a slender dude, too. He's not like this physically intimidating guy, but it's the phone that makes him intimidating, and the knife. And it was this first movie, and I know we've seen slashers before kind of like this, but it seemed like the first movie that really anybody in your friend group could be the killer, you know? And this is like a stereotypical like friend group. Like, a lot of us in America, you know, growing up had a friend group like this with the nerdy guy and the hot chick, and, you know, and to think that one of those people could be a knife wielding maniac. It brought a sort of realism to the movie, I think.
Absolutely. And what a lot of people don't pick up on is that Scream is very comedic. It's very self-aware. It's one of the first films in the 90s that actually broke the fourth wall.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't intentionally talk to your viewers, but you kind of felt like they knew what was going on.
Yeah. It felt like they were very in on it.
Yeah, like a few different times, a few different characters said that they were in a movie.
Yeah.
So, there you go. I mean, that's honestly, I feel that's why it did so well.
Yeah.
Because of that, they were able to create a movie within a movie, which gave it a whole nother backstory.
And then they end up doing it again with Stab and all that, too.
Well, that's what I mean. The movie within a movie, Stab.
Yeah. And they do it really well. Do you think, because obviously if you ask any, maybe not any Scream fan, because Scream obviously has a hardcore fan base. But if you ask any horror fan what the best Scream movie is, they're all going to say what?
Two.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the second one is the best, but... Do you think people think that because maybe this has the best... Do you think that this is the best friend group or the best side cast of characters out of all the movies?
I will have to agree with that just because of the fact that they went kind of... I mean, not really deep, but they went kind of deep into character development.
Yeah, for like, a slasher, definitely deeper than the norm.
Exactly. And like in 2 and 3 and 4, they kind of did that a little bit. But they fell short just a tad, unfortunately. So I will have to say the original kids from Scream, they do stand out. They will always be my favorite characters. As far as my favorite movie of it goes, that would be Scream 2. But favorite characters that work together, I would say Scream 1. Because, I mean, the water fountain scene where they're making fun of each other and whatnot, that was not only comedic, but it was also like kind of sweet to see them all bonding and being friends and just being kids in high school.
Yeah, exactly. And I think because when you think about, like, even as a movie fan, like Stumacher, Randy, like Tatum, like these are classic characters too in their own right.
Absolutely.
And a lot of them are just there to, like, some of them, like, Tatum's, like, there to just die. I mean, she could have been just written as, like, the dumb friend. But she wasn't. She was more of a fleshed-out character.
And I do believe that it had a lot to do with not only Mr. Craven's direction and Mr. Williamson's writing, but the actors were so young, and they were so, I don't want to say desperate because I don't want to make it seem like that.
So like hungry.
But they were hungry. Exactly. They were hungry. They wanted to be known. They wanted somebody to go, oh, I remember that person.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know. I know you do know, Daniel, that a lot of Scream was actually ad-libbed.
Yeah.
By a lot of our favorite characters like Stu, Billy, Tatum. They've all ad-libbed at one point in time.
Oh, yeah.
And Wes Craven said that himself in the documentary, Still Screaming, that he loved it. He loved that about the cast, that they were so enthusiastic to be a part of his project that they were willing to go the extra mile.
Absolutely. And especially Matthew Lillard, because I know you've read the script. I read the script. And when you go back reading the script, the first one titled Kevin Williamson's Scary Movie, Stu is more like a background character. Like, he's not as funny. He's not as kind of menacing either. He's just basically Billy's like puppy dog. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just there.
Yeah. In the script, that's kind of what Stu's purpose is. But Matthew Lillard just trumps him up, and he's got iconic movie moments as Stu. You know, a lot of people, Matthew Lillard's a decorated actor, and a lot of people remember him as Stu Marker.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, because that is one of his most famous roles, but I also think that's because Matthew Lillard is a very much so method actor.
Yeah.
And I feel like since he was young and hungry, and this is one of his first roles, that he took it very, very personally. And I appreciate that as a fan, because like you said, he was menacing. Like, he was the funny guy and whatnot, but I don't know if you remember the video store scene when they go visit Randy and Billy, and he runs into Billy, and Stu grabs him from behind and looks like he's half choking, half hugging.
Yeah, kind of had him in a hold a little bit.
Yeah. That was really scary, and that was really intense. That was a very suspenseful moment, because Billy did not look at Stu once, but Stu never took his eyes off Billy.
Yeah.
And it just shows how much of a connection the two of them must have had to get Billy to go, to get Stu to go along with his plan.
Yeah.
Because Stu wasn't a psychopath. I mean, he might be in some sort of way, kind of, I guess. I guess there had to have been something wrong with him to go along with it all. But Billy was the idea man. He was the one that was going through everything that caused this to happen. Stu was basically just on for the ride. Like, in one of his ad-lib lines that were, it's peer pressure.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know this, but that was actually supposed to be a separate scene with Billy and Stu off to the side after Billy had gotten out of jail. But Wes pulled it because he thought that it was too giving away.
Yeah.
That it was given away right there that the two of them were the killers. And he didn't want to do that. So he pulled it. But it was filmed. So later, Matthew Lillard decided to just use it when she asked him, what's your motive?
Peer pressure, for 2 cents.
Yeah, his actual motive was supposed to be, well, I've always really liked you, and you've never laid an eye on me.
Yeah, they hinted at that a little bit, like a sprinkled it a little bit with, I always had a crush on you, Sid.
Exactly, but it was supposed to be a deeper obsession. It was supposed to be more of like a Randy obsession that he had with her. But I think Matthew Lillard, the way that he tweaked it, I think it was just perfect. I mean, especially when the phone gets thrown at him and he's like, hit me with the phone, you dick. Like, that wasn't supposed to be in there either, but Wes Craven laughed so hard that he's like, we got to keep that in there. That was just, keep going.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think we can kind of determine Billy made most of the phone calls, right? When you said he's the idea man.
Absolutely. Stu was definitely the one that had the most blood on his hands. And I think Billy meticulously did that.
Yeah.
Because in the end, you do find out that Billy was going to frame him for everything. I mean, it wasn't necessarily said, but it is very much so implied.
Yeah.
That Stu was going to be the one to go down.
Yeah.
And so I believe that, yes, Billy definitely was behind the phone calls and everything, because why would he want to get blood on his hands? And he was also using a fake phone. He was using Sydney's dad's phone.
Yeah.
That was cloned. So, I mean, what's the purpose for him to get his hands dirty except for what he wanted, which was Maureen and Sydney.
Yeah. And the thing with Stu is you were talking about it earlier about how it would give it away too much. I feel like they really did a good job, Williamson and Craven, of making them seem, because they always seemed like friends throughout the whole thing, and you knew they were best buds, but it didn't, you never really put the two together. Like, oh, Stu could be helping him. Like, it was just little things, like at the water fountain when he's like,
absolutely,
I'm not a killer. And he's like, no one said you were. And he like stares at him.
Absolutely. And also going back to the water fountain scene when Sydney is asking, like, how would you actually gut somebody? But she didn't mean, like, how would you gut somebody? She meant tact. Like, how would you be willing to do that to someone? And Matthew Lillard describes to her how to gut a person, because he took it as the first thing that I said, is her asking, how do you gut a person? He took it literally. And Skeet Ulrich, who was supposed to be his best friend, he was supposed to be his buddy, it's just like, it's called tack, you fucker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was very much so his friend, but he was always very much so his lackey.
Yeah.
He was the last dog.
Yeah, but it didn't seem too much to where at the end you knew, you know?
No.
They did it in a good way.
Absolutely.
Before we move on to Scream 2, we definitely have to shed a light on a couple characters that can't get overlooked. One, how important is the Randy Meeks character to the horror movie genre?
Randy Meeks, man. I love Randy Meeks. I've even watched some classic horror movies just because of the references that he said. Like,
yeah.
I said about the high school, the Slaughter High and whatnot. I have to watch Final Exam, which you brought up in the second one. It was just a very well thought out character. And he had so much knowledge. He really should have been kept on for the third. And that was initially going to be their plan.
Yeah.
At the end of the second, they were going to do the same thing that they did with Dewey, with Randy, and have it be that Randy was back home in Woodsboro being nursed back to health by his mother.
Right.
But Wes cut it. And he ended up just doing the film scene in Scream 3.
Yeah.
Do I think that was a good choice? Yes and no. Yeah, yes and no. I kind of got really upset when he died.
Well, I think it was important for the second movie, and it was one of the cooler kills because it was broad daylight, but it made the third movie lack a lot, not having him around.
Exactly. Not having him there to have everyone, like, be second-thinking everyone. Like,
yeah.
When him and Dewey are in the yogurt shop and he mentions Mickey being a suspect, and he is like, well, if he's a suspect, then so am I.
Let's move on.
And Dewey's like, well, wait a minute, maybe you are a suspect. And he's like, but if I'm a suspect, then you're a suspect. And then Dewey's like, okay, well, let's move on.
Yeah. That part was great. I know she's probably your least favorite character in horror, but we do got to touch on Gale Weathers a little bit. How important was the reporter character? And in a horror movie, you think all the victims are usually good people.
She was a bitch.
She was a bitch. Yeah, she got to play a bitch. And how important is Gale to this franchise, looking at it as a fan, though?
She really is important, honestly, because she gives the first one that sense of, well, who did it?
Yeah.
Because you're saying that Cotton did it, but Cotton's telling me that he left his coat at your house and someone else left wearing it to frame him. So what's the real story? So I think with her being a reporter and having a completely different insight and getting a different side of the story, I think that was actually really necessary, and I think that was really good that they kept that in there and they kept her. Though I do not like Gale Weathers over the years, I will have to say that she is the one that's grown the most. She went from being the most self-involved to being the most caring.
But yeah, there is a lot of character development there.
Exactly. So I will give her that. But, I mean, she was kind of critical to it. If there wasn't a Gail Weathers, then there wouldn't have been a book.
Yeah.
There wouldn't have been a Stab. There wouldn't have been a Stab 3. Like,
and the side story with Dewey.
Exactly. So I do feel like she was kind of integral to the series, as much as I don't like her.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're not really supposed to like her. Either.
No. So she even said herself, she's a bitch.
Yeah.
She loves it.
Yeah. Before we move on, what is your favorite kill in this movie?
In the first one?
Yeah.
That's a toughie. It's definitely stuck between Stephen Orth.
Oh, yeah.
And Tatum.
Oh, yeah. That was going to be what I was going to say.
Yeah, because also Tatum had a really funny fight scene.
Yeah.
Like, she tried really hard to put up a fight. I mean, the whole doggy door thing, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, like, when she's throwing the bottles at him and stuff, and, like, actually trying to fight him, like, she tried.
Yeah.
She put up a good fight. So, she was definitely one of my favorite kills. One of the kills I could have done without would have had to be Principal Hemery. I don't think he had to die.
Yeah, did you hear about why they killed him? Because Principal Hemery wasn't supposed to die in the original script,
mm-hmm.
but the studio, the Weinsteins, told Craven, we need something, some action before the party scene.
So they decided to take out the principal.
Yeah, so they just killed him off real quick. I'd agree. That's not the most memorable one. I mean, it's okay. And it's just funny that Henry Winkler's in the Scream movie.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to see Fonzie beat it.
Yeah. It's kind of cool as a veteran actor, though, that he kept his name he wasn't in the end credits, right? He kept his name out of the end credits. He didn't want any promotion like him in it because he didn't want to take away from these young stars. And yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. I mean, I do have to say, though, him as a whole, as a character, he was creepy.
Yeah, the creepy principal touching his hand on
Like, touching his hand on telling his students, I love you, your principal cares. I've never had a principal tell me that they love me.
No, me either.
Like, that is not a thing. They do not come over to the speakerphone and go, your principal loves you and wants you to get home safely. No.
No, that's not the way it's going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be, well, take some extra care. There's a curfew in effect.
Yeah.
Not make sure that you're always with a buddy. A principal's not going to talk to you that way. I'm sorry.
No. I got to give a shout out to Kenny the cameraman, too.
That was a
kill, too.
He risked his life.
For Sydney.
He risked his life for Sydney, and then he bled all over Gail's van and screamed at his dead body to get the hell off her windshield.
Yeah.
That's probably my third favorite kill, I will have to say. If I had to do top three, I will have to say Kenny is definitely the third favorite.
It's sort of
I
sweet.
Love Kenny. I mean, a lot of people don't pick up on, like, the muttering that he did, but there were a few times where he got a few digs. And on Gail, when she particularly was at Sydney's house, I believe you know about this, Daniel. She was at Sydney's, it was right after the attack, and they arrested Billy. And she said, come on, get the Camry, hurry, Jesus. And he said, my name is not Jesus.
Yeah, I remember that.
So there's just, and like, when she was like, when I say hurry, I mean move your fat. Hubbard Lard asked, now, a lot of people don't realize this, but when she walked away, he called her a bitch.
Like under his breath?
Yes.
That's funny.
So he was very funny. And also, he really wanted to help Cotton Weary, too.
Yeah.
Like, he believed what Gail believed, but he believed it for a different reason. Like, when she was standing there telling him, like, you know what this means, we can get an innocent man out of jail. He was thinking, that's an amazing thing. We're going to get this guy out of jail. And she's like, do you know what this can do for my book sales? And
yeah.
Like, standing there like, with a perplexed look on his face, like, are you serious? This is a man's life.
Yeah.
but okay, be excited about your book. So Kenny was an absolutely integral character to the series. I mean, and honestly, if it wasn't for him, Sydney might not have made it.
Yeah, with the van scene and everything. Yeah,
because he told her where to go when he was sliced. He turned around and put his finger to the back door.
Yeah.
And showed her that there is a crawl space. If he had not done that, she would have died.
Yeah. It shows you how good the movie is, too, that minor characters like that really mean something.
Yeah. Everybody had a purpose.
Yes. 100%. Now, going on to Scream 2, would you say that this is one of the most solid sequels in horror movie history?
Absolutely. Even to this day, I will have to say they did a really good job with transitioning over the 2 years and whatnot, and they did an excellent job with the whole transitioning them into college and into a new phase of their life and everything. I just thought it was beautifully done. I mean, the actors that were brought on did a really good job.
Yeah.
I honestly wish they would have kept the ending that they had, but I understand why they went with the latter.
Well, tell them about the ending that they had.
The original ending was supposed to have Derek, Sydney's boyfriend, Haley, Sydney's roommate, and Debbie Salt, Mrs. Loomis, as the killers.
Really?
Mickey was a victim that was killed.
No way, really?
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah, I never heard
that. That's what it was supposed to be. But a lot of people do not know this. That script ended up being leaked onto the internet. And Williamson got so disgusted that he wrote a different script.
Okay.
Because of it.
Yeah.
So that's why it ended up being changed. Because people already knew. So he was like, I'm not going to put out a movie where people know. That's not us. So they did it over.
Right.
But it was originally supposed to be Mrs. Loomis, Haley, and Derek.
That's and it's interesting because it feels like that movie, like The Killers, especially Mickey and Mrs. Loomis, that it really worked. Especially like Mickey's, how he was another Randy. But you're used to from the first movie, you're kind of trained to think, oh, the film geek, he can't be the film geek. You know, it can't be like a Randy.
Absolutely.
So when it turns out to be Mickey, and Mickey's one of my favorite killers in the franchise.
He was funny. He was very funny, actually. And he was very sadistic, and he was very convincing, too,
yeah.
Honestly. He convinced Sydney that her boyfriend had betrayed her again.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, Sydney is the one that got Derek killed.
Yeah, exactly. And just tell them a little bit about Mrs. Loomis and kind of her backstory and the nod to Mrs. Voorhees.
I think what they were trying to do with Mrs. Loomis as far as tributing Mrs. Voorhees, having a mother come back to avenge her son and everything. And I understand the nod to that. I appreciate it. But let's be honest here. She had 5 scenes. It's really not probable to think that she was that big of a killer. And honestly, in the end scene when she was fighting Sydney, she got crushed by fake blocks. And got really hurt. So, that being said, I doubt she would be able to pull off any of the other kills besides the one that she admitted, which was Randy.
Yeah.
But, and in a total, I don't really feel like she should have even been there. She had already left her family. She already left Billy.
So even though it's your favorite movie in the franchise, that reveal didn't do it for you.
I mean, it did it. It was like, oh, I can't believe it. But
it could have done better.
Being older now and seeing it and whatnot, it's just way too predictable.
Yeah.
The whole revenge thing. Like, they already did a revenge thing, and then they went into another revenge thing. Mickey was so original.
Yeah, his motive was cool.
Blaming it on the movies and everything else. I mean, he was crazy. But
he wanted to get caught, though.
He was funny.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get caught.
Yeah.
He had a specific lawyer that was going to be at his trial.
Yeah.
For him. So, I mean, and also, let's just say, Mickey is the only killer and the only person throughout the entire Scream franchise that went undetected for 45 minutes and still no one knew he was the killer.
Yeah, it was not predictable at all. And yeah, you're right. He was out of the movie for 45 minutes.
Yes, he was.
And no one really
No
thought
one
of
had any idea.
Yeah. One of the things I really enjoyed Derek's character is the boyfriend. I know the one scene people shit on is him dancing in the lunchroom.
I love that scene. That scene was so cute. And honestly, it really it brought the heart.
Yeah.
It brought the feeling to it. And I honestly feel had Derek not had that scene, I wouldn't have been as upset when he died.
Yeah.
I also feel like that scene kind of redeemed himself because Randy made a lot of sense when he said about that wound of his missing every single artery and the fact that he was a pre-med student. So it kind of got suspicion right off of him for me personally.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if he's going to table dance and sing about how much he loves her, I doubt he actually wants to kill her.
The movie did a good job at making him suspect number one, especially after the Billy thing.
Absolutely.
Even though he seems like a good guy throughout the whole thing, I mean, Mickey even successfully, scared Sydney into thinking that Derek could still be the killer, even though he was all trapped up.
Absolutely. He completely manipulated her mind.
Yeah.
I mean, she knew at one point that he did love her, but she also had that, oh my God, what if it did happen again? So, unfortunately, because of that, Derek died. But I do feel like it was necessary for Sydney's character development.
Oh, 100%. I think it meant a lot to her character development.
Yeah, well, because he was her first love.
Yeah, and I love the dynamic that she's scared because of the whole Billy thing, and he took her virginity, too. So she's scared to get in with a new guy and really trust him. She doesn't know how to trust a guy like that because the last guy she trusted was Billy. I mean, Dewey's like her big brother and stuff, but as far as like a love interest. And of course, when shit goes down, everyone's going to point their finger at Derek. So I love the dynamic between the two.
Exactly.
The only thing, and I don't want to be mean to the friend, because when we go to my favorite kills in this movie, the way her what's her friend's name?
Haley.
The way Haley dies is fucking awesome.
It really is. I will have to say it is. Go ahead.
But the only problem I have with this franchise is that I feel like sometimes some characters are rehashes of the other ones. I don't think Derek's a Billy rehash. I think he's his own thing. Haley definitely seems like another poor attempt at a Tatum. I like Tatum better as the best friend. It seems like she really cared about her.
I would really have to agree. Haley, I don't know if it was the actress or the writing or anything. No disrespect, either one. But I kind of feel like they were pushing her a little bit too much.
Yeah.
To be caring. Like, she kept on saying, like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? Like, I feel like she was a little bit too up her butt.
Yeah. And it seems like she cared more about the sorority stuff, too. And she was just kind of friends with Sydney because of the roommates.
Yeah, and she wanted to get Sydney. Like, part of her cared, though, because she did want to get Sydney into the sorority life.
Yeah.
But, so I think a part of her cared about Sydney, and then another part of her was just like, she's just my roommate.
Yeah.
Like, I should keep an eye on her so she doesn't commit suicide, because she's had a lot of fucked up shit happen to her.
Yeah, exactly. Besides that, I think we got to talk about the Randy death, because that, I mean, to me, that's another one of my favorites in this, just because it's hard to kill somebody in broad daylight, especially in a horror movie, and make it that, I guess it wasn't that scary, but it was at the same time.
It was, though, because people right next to him with the boombox and the van shaking back and forth and whatnot, and like nobody noticed.
Yeah. And when the van opens up, like it will get you to jump on first watch. We've seen this like 50 times, but if you, But if you're a first time watcher, I feel like that will jump. That is a genuine jump scare.
Absolutely, especially with all the blood coming out of it. Like she really did slice and dice on him.
Yeah.
Like she went ham on it, but also he talked about her son. But
yeah, he did.
She really got him good.
Oh yeah, and like you said, I think that was probably her only kill in the movie.
Absolutely, because she wasn't around.
Yeah, and I don't think she was trying to kill them at that point either. I think she even says that at the end, right? Like I wasn't. If your friend would have kept his mouth shut or something like that.
Well, she says to Sydney basically that she was just there to taunt them and tease them while Mickey did it.
Yeah. And then he got a little too.
And then Randy started talking about her son, and she got a little knife happy.
Yes. That was.
So, and that's because Sydney had brought up to her about Billy being a pansy-ass mama's boy. And she is like, watch it. The last person that talked. And I got a little knife hack. So, I mean, I really do feel like that's the only one that she really did kill. I mean, who knows? They could have been an actual Debbie Salt.
Yeah.
That she killed. Because she could have, she had to have gotten the name and the alias somewhere.
Yeah.
So, that does leave a little bit of like an empty line there. A little bit. Because or plot hole or whatnot, because like you don't really know.
Yeah, and he's and just in build. I mean, I know you can kind of make things look differently in like muscle padding, but it's obviously a dude. You can tell in stature that Ghostface is a dude in the second movie at least.
I'm gonna ruin everyone's life, and I really don't mean to, but the person that was behind the Ghostface mask was always either A, somebody that Wes hired.
Yeah.
And he would go on, no one would ever see him. Or it would be Wes Craven himself. So no one would know.
Right.
He did that to keep the suspense up.
Yeah. Well, I just mean in terms of the movie, like who is probably.
Like for the viewer.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Obviously it's a stuntman and obviously. We know the man behind the phone calls, and it's not Skeet Ulrich or Matthew Lillard.
I love the man behind the phone calls.
Yeah. And
Mark, I can't remember his last name. I love you, Mark.
But hey, he's cool because, I mean, I think we're gonna cut it soon and have this a part one, and then we'll maybe do 3, 4 in the TV series and another episode.
I agree.
But that we got to get into that guy a little bit because Wes Craven's style is just so unique, right? About having the guy make the phone calls and none of the actors have ever seen him. I still don't think that Nev Campbell has ever met this man.
Like, no, she wasn't allowed to. None of them were allowed to.
To keep the suspense up, to keep them scared because they don't know what this dude looks like.
The only person that ever saw him was Drew Barrymore. Because she told Wes, I need to.
Yes.
After all this. You gotta let me see him. So, he did. But that was also because Wes Craven was constantly showing her pictures of a dog in a car crash on fire. What happened to her dog.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he definitely pushes people to the limit. But I also think in a way he pulls back a little bit.
Yeah.
Like he knows when somebody's going to break entirely and he's like, oh, no, don't do that.
Well, yeah, and he does have a good connection with these actors. Like they all love Wes. But
exactly.
It's just that's his style of making a good movie. So.
Exactly. Like if a lot of people want a really good laugh and you've all seen the Scream movies, I will definitely recommend to you the Scream 4 bloopers. There is 5 minutes dedicated to Mr. Craven and one of the stunt guys scaring the crap out of all of the cast members. He'd be like, hey, Courtney, can you go to that closet over there? I just need you to go over the closet real quick. And she'd open the door and Ghostface would pop out and scare the crap out of her.
Yeah.
The only person who couldn't get to do it was Nev Campbell.
Yeah.
He tried and she's like, no, I don't think you need to go in that closet. If you got to go in the closet, you can go in yourself. And he's like, but I need you to walk over there. And she's like, I'm not walking over there. I'm not sleeping. And he's like, will you just walk over there, please? You don't even have to open the closet. And she's like, no, I'm not stupid. But everyone else he got.
Right.
He even got Anthony Anderson on the floor. That man fell. It was hilarious. So that is definitely something to check out. Scream 4 bloopers.
Oh, yeah. That shit's hilarious. To sort of wrap this up soon, I want to ask you your favorite kill in this movie. And then your favorite, or to you, the most iconic moment in either movie. Or in both movies. The most iconic moment in Scream 1 and 2. And then we're going to head home.
I would say in the first one, it was definitely when Sydney had been all said and done and Randy was telling her to watch out for the killer because I always come back from when we're scared. She had the gun in her hand. Lily jumped up and she shot him in the head and she's like, not in my movie.
Yeah.
Because I really do feel that that was kind of a character development for her. That was her being like, I'm not doing this. This
yeah.
is my life. It's not a movie. If it is a movie, it's mine.
Right.
And then as far as the second one goes, I would have to say,
the most iconic moment in the second movie?
I would have to say Joel. I never would have thought Joel would come back.
Oh,
after he left.
Yeah.
After he was like, I'm going to go get some Xanax, Coke, see if I can go get some dope. And, like, he just took off after Randy's death.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he comes back and he, like, puts the microphone in Gail's hand and he's like, let's report, like, the old days. Old days? You didn't meet her until the beginning of the movie. What are you talking about, old days?
I love that they put that in there because he's like the one guy that survived a scary movie just by saying, fucking him out. Just by walking away.
And yeah, that's how he honestly, I got to give it to Wes Craven because it being the 90s and everything. I mean, I will have to say, unfortunately, the black community in slasher movies was seen more as a throwaway. I'll give it to Joel. He survived.
Yeah, he did.
And he came back.
Yeah.
I mean, I do have to say, though, the fact that when he was, like, just like the old golden days. What? What olden days?
He's been like, here for, like, 2 hours.
Like, 5 days ago? Because yeah. That's how long the movie spanned out, was a week.
Yeah.
So, when? Like, when you left her? So, that was honestly my favorite and the most significant part, because I thought it was so funny that he actually came back to work with her. Because she could have been sent anybody, but he went back.
Last question for you before we head out.
Okay.
What do you think the Scream franchise, in specific these two movies, these first two, did for the horror movie genre? What does this mean for horror movies? What has Scream done? And even for movies in general.
They restarted the slasher. They, like I said before, I mean, there were slashers to come before it and whodunits to come before it, but it really did regenerate it for the time that it had come out, both of them. I do think the second one was a very fresh take because it was trying so hard to not be a sequel that failed.
Right.
Like they brought up in the beginning. So I do feel that both of them are very significant to the horror genre. I mean, I unfortunately do disagree with people that hate them, but everyone is up to their own opinion. Opinions are like assholes. Everyone has one.
Yeah.
So it's fine. but I do feel like those two really started the slasher whodunit.
I agree.
Again.
Yeah, 100%. And on that note, this was Controlled Chaos. The first part, we'll do a part two in the future. We'll announce that. But the Scream franchise retrospective, I want to give a big thank you to Mindy for coming on.
You are very welcome.
And we will see you all guys next time. Thank you for joining us.
Bye, guys.